Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I think my ear hole has gotten bigger. Or this little adapter's getting
every
smaller.
Every chance. So that's like global warming.
Chemtrails, mate.
Back in the studio for the 20 Minute Tim's flagship podcast, the Celtic overcome the cursed plastic pitch at Livingston to register a 3-0 win. I'm joined by Martin Melly.
Yes.
And Stephen.
Good to be back. Good to be back after the international break and all that sort of stuff.
The holiday weekend, international break. And Celtic return to what was a cursed arena for us for the longest time. It's the Tony Macaroni, isn't it? It's still the Tony Macaroni.
I refuse to say that.
The most ridiculously named stadium and actually the most ridiculous pitch.
Unless they pay us, of course. Unless they want to
sponsor it. You're in the pocket of big pasta, right? I suppose we need to get it out of the way. The pitch. Most people will say it's a disgrace, but fair play to Livingston. They did have it hoovered in iron for us, didn't they?
I know they couldn't do anything about it because it rained before it, didn't it? It rained the day before it, so they couldn't do that thing where they let the grass dry as the other opposition teams in this country do.
Right. The thing is, it's a bit old hat to slag the Livingston pitch, right? Because everyone moans about these plastic pitches, but it is
terrible looking.
You just watch it and you think, is this our top league? And you made a good point. In fact, I wouldn't let you make the point pre-recording here, you says that it affects Livingston as well.
My thing with these pitches has always been that I don't really necessarily believe that it's possible to have an advantage on it because I from watching many games, unfortunately watching many games over many years on these pitches, I don't feel like any team really looks any better or worse than the opposition on it. So I know that Livingston practice more, have more experience playing on the pitch than Celtic do, but they don't look particularly sure either because, I mean, they're all professional footballers at the end of the day. They've all come up playing on grass, presumably. And there was a moment in the game where I think it was Sangare. Now, Joe Hart had pulled off a really cracking save from their sort of left, inside left channel. He got down and saved it, but they had something very similar. Sangare had a chance and he could have hit it two or three times, but he looked very unsure of where the ball was going to bounce. So I don't think it is as much of a... I suppose it is a leveller, but I don't think it's as much of an advantage to the home team as is made out because nobody looks particularly confident.
The nature of it is it's unpredictable.
Yeah,
and you can't predict the bounce on the pitch. Speaking of unpredictability, I thought it was a brilliant move from James Forrest to distract everyone from the fact that James Forrest was playing by not wearing football boots. He opted for the Henrik Larsson style AstroTurf trainer.
Rare to see, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a disgrace. In your top league, you've got a guy wearing Astro boots.
It's the look, isn't it? The look. It's even just when the camera pans in. If the sun's out, it looks terrible. If it's a bit dark, it looks terrible. It's just a horrible, horrible aesthetic to be promoting our top game, wasn't it? That's the opening game of the weekend. And look, Celtic are going up there. We've already lost to Kilmarnock this season. We thought we'd sort of got over it with Ange, but then you've got Brendan Rodgers going back for the first time and canter in the end.
I mean, it was a potential banana skin.
Oh, of course. So these games always are. And Celtic off the back of the European game and all that and still not quite get a settled squad. And then when the lineup comes out, you're like, James Forrest made it in.
It's one of those fixtures you kind of dread, isn't it? It's because, not necessarily because they're a particularly great team, but it's because they've caused problems there before. Now, a number of managers have kind of come a cropper there. We've not particularly, well, we've not traditionally got very good results there. But going in, you always feel that you're in for a not particularly good game of football. And that's, to one extent or another, generally pretty true. I think Brendan Rodgers has been vocal about that in the past, about how he'd never really seen a good game of football played on a plastic pitch. And he made some sort of pointed remarks afterwards about how Joe Hart looked as if he'd been caught out for it when he's sending off on a normal, he described it on a normal surface, so that doesn't get away from him. Joe Hart probably claims it. So it was one of those ones where I went in thinking it could be one of those sticky afternoons, just based on the very recent past having played there. But Celtic did it, went about it pretty well. Given the circumstances, given that we're still quite short on certain positions that we can call upon, I thought it was actually a pretty good performance given the circumstances.
Well, I said, things were kind of piling up against us, weren't they, Melly? It was the pitch, it was Livingston, it was always going to be like a tricky tie. We had the European away game, and then Joe Hart goes and gets himself sent off.
Yeah, look, it's easy. It'd be easy to go out there and crumble in that, wasn't it? Easy pitch, 10 men. Oh, it just wasn't their day. This team are starting to show they're made of stern stuff, aren't they? They can go in there and battle. They can suffer. We've seen that in the Rangers game. But they can go out and defend, kind of. We're not conceding a lot of goals. The Feyenoord game, all right. But domestically, we're not conceding a lot of goals. And this team just looks as if they're strong.
You get the feeling things are starting to... I know Neil Lennon said it, but things are starting to click a wee bit for Brendan, aren't they? You get the feeling that things are falling into place. And I still do have a degree of sympathy for him, no having his head starting to live in, as he would call it. But even in that game, the wee tactical switches he made after the sending off, first player hooked is James Forrest, incidentally. But, you know, that's a real bit of tactical genius in itself.
Yeah, look, James Forrest isn't the kind of guy you want in that situation. And look, it's not really his fault anyway, because when you go down to that, Rodgers done it before at Ibrox. He went 4-3-2, left two strikers up there running at the channels and pressing the life out of Livingston. And it's no James Forrest game, is it? So I think Brendan Rodgers got it spot on. You can... With this team now, we're not conceding goals, we're not playing brilliantly, and you're just thinking there's more to come from this, and that's quite a good situation to be in at this point, because you feel once we get players settled in, once we get players back, we're going to be better. And Brendan Rodgers spoke about it in the summer, how we needed a bit more power. The team are stronger, I feel, this season, not the players on the pitch, but they just have this bit of grit about them that's good. And then when the football comes as well, like, we still try to play football on Saturday, hell of a hard on that pitch, but came out of the game, I was like, that was a really good victory. I'm not even sure they probably would have, but again, comparison, would Ange's team went out and done that? I'm not sure, probably. But
did Melly say he did, didn't he? Well, it doesn't matter. The listeners are not exactly what I'm on about.
Hold on a minute here, though. Peak Brendan Rodgers goes down to 10 men at Ibrox, puts on an attacking player and gets the job done. This time around, goes down to 10 men at Almondvale, puts on a keeper. Pathetic.
absolute
cop-out. That's a defensive move. Putting on a keeper in place of a winger, absolutely pathetic stuff. We've regressed, clearly, at this club.
Ange wouldn't have done that. I mean... I know Brendan Rodgers kindly sort of blamed the pitch a wee bit for Joe Hart, but Joe's had a bit of a week, as you know.
A very interesting week for Joe Hart, which we'll come on to, of course. But I mean, as clear a red card as you ever see. I mean, I'd noted with humour there some of the takes afterwards about how, I mean, I think broadly speaking, everyone was just like, of course it's a red card. But you do get the odd ultras in there, the old Uber fans who are like, oh no, I think it's really harsh, because if anything, Sangari went in with his stud, so it's a foul on Joe Hart.
Joe Hart's family. I'm like trying to back him up.
But it's weird how goalkeepers exist in their own sort of bubble. They can do basically whatever they want and people kind of defend. If a defender does that, just runs out and clatters through a guy at like shoulder height, it's a straight red. So
he could have gardened them.
Yeah, well, it was interesting that it was almost, what was it, 7 years kind of to the day that Craig Gordon had he did that against Alloa. I remember that game pretty well, because it fell on my birthday and I went to see
Jack Ross must have been in the charge of Alloa that time,
and so what better way to spend it than to go up to Celtic Park and see Craig Gordon kung fu kicking a part time footballer clean off the pitch. So conjuring the spirit of Craig Gordon was Joe Hart there. But the thing is, I think Joe Hart's had a good season so far. It's just
a bad week.
I think it's a bad week, but he again showed his worth by having that save that I referenced earlier, a really smart save down his left, and that was nothing each.
Well.
I'd saved the penalty. It was a crap penalty against Feyenoord, right enough, but a really smart save at nothing each that could have had everyone thinking, oh no, here's the Livingston curse again. But Joe Hart kind of turned up when it mattered, but then also just completely let us down after half an hour. It's one of those mad moments. And I think I can sort of agree with Brendan Rodgers that maybe that doesn't happen on a grass pitch, but I think we're kind of reaching there.
He needs to have a wee bit more spatial awareness, I think.
Yeah.
He needs to sort of avoid getting into those situations at all times. But Joe Hart does like... I've noticed recently, more often recently actually, Joe Hart's coming for the ball a lot more. Mm.
Yeah, he was stuck to his line from crosses a lot of the time, but when he's out, he tries to get out, but I just don't think he's got the speed in his body anymore.
No, he's moving like Joe Biden.
So
moving like Owen Hart. Too soon.
So I think when he's coming out, you've got that split second. Yep, please don't. Oh, he's done it. And as soon as that comes out, you sort of see John Beaton with the red card, and you can hear.
It's the only thing John Beaton got right on after noon, ironically.
Couldn't wait to get the card out. He nearly took the guy's head off, but wasn't it? It was a clear sending off, and just before that, you thought, look, 1-0 up here, Celtic. Popping the ball about as well as they can on this pitch, this might be all right today. You had other plans, but Celtic were fine after that.
I've sort of noticed the changes between Celtic under Brendan Rodgers and Celtic between Ange and Melly. You were talking about the sort of difference between two, but I just feel that Celtic are, how do you, I want to use this, but I'm maybe miscontextualising it, but Celtic just seem a lot more professional under Brendan. What I mean by that is a wee bit more adaptable, a wee bit in control. It's not the keep going, it'll eventually happen. It's work it out, try and find a different way to play. Okay, we can change things. We've already seen Greg Taylor in the last couple of weeks. His position slightly changed. Brendan Rodgers is kind of altering things, and he's altering things in-game as well.
Testing the electric fences for weaknesses.
Exactly, yes. like the Raptors in Jurassic. Did you see Jurassic Park?
I went to see it the other day. So, but plenty of Jurassic Park references to come in this podcast probably. But yeah, I get that. I think we've all been waiting for this Brendan Rodgers, for Brendan Rodgers' team to sort of announce itself, to identify itself, what it's going to look like going forward, because we were a wee bit, maybe through overhyped expectations coming into this season, all the talk about the budget and all that sort of stuff and what we were going to do in the transfer market. I think we were all a wee bit deflated, a wee bit disappointed with what was served up in the first four games of the season or so going out of the cup. But I think we're really starting to see... It's really just a case of being patient, I think. And it's easy to get carried away because we say things like, oh, but this team's in a perfect position already. All we need to do is just keep on going. But that's not what appointing a new manager, that's not how it works at all. You'd be as well putting John Kennedy in charge if it was just a case of, right, well, just keep going. Don't bother changing anything, keep going. So it was always going to be, with the benefit of hindsight now, I think, as I say, we're all a wee bit deflated when you go out the cup and draw nothing at St Johnstone. But I think we're starting to see the reasons that Brendan Rodgers was brought back to this club in the first place. And it can only get better from here as well as we start to click and as we start to find the rhythm in this team. So the Champions League that we're in just now, we've had a bit of a hiccup there.
Yeah.
Absolutely ludicrous game of football, which we'll come on to later on. And now we've got suspensions going into the next one. So that has become
He's not making it easier on himself. I suppose one thing making it easier, one thing... that's happening, the players are starting to pull out some really good performances, and you're looking at like Matt O'Reilly. He must be the best player in the league at the moment.
Oh, on form. He's definitely the best player in the league. We kind of said at the start of the season, you kind of can't help but go back to Brendan Rodgers' first season and compare a wee bit and say, can he make Matt O'Reilly the Stuart Armstrong, that guy that... And he talked about changing his role a wee bit, and Matt O'Reilly can see the pitch in front of him now, and he's getting into the box now, and before he was doing that, but... getting into dangerous positions, and for a change, he's putting them away. I think Matt O'Reilly has upped his game for a wee bit. I think last season, his numbers were great, everything was great, but he didn't have those Matt O'Reilly performances. He was brilliant against Rangers at the 4-0 game, but after that, he couldn't really pick out many games that were the Matt O'Reilly game. But now he's just becoming this sort of fleet midfielder for Celtic, and him, Callum McGregor, and also having Rio Hitati there. Wasn't he great, but just having that creativity, it's a good blend in there. And if Matt O'Reilly's going to chip in with goals now, there's not too much he can add to his game. So it's great to watch him getting into that those positions, especially when you go down to 10 men and you're playing that three in midfield. You need somebody supporting the two strikers, and for him to get in that box when Daiza Maeda somehow manages to miss, if he gets in there and gets into those positions, he'll get any double figures this season.
When he got into that position, I thought, clever girl.
No.
He's been excellent, absolutely excellent. And I think he's responded really well to Brendan Rodgers coming in. I think he even said that. And a lot of people took that as a dig at Ange Postecoglou. I don't think it's necessarily true that he has said that or rather alluded to the fact that he maybe prefers the methods of that just happens. That happens all the time. And it won't be across the board. It will be certain players. There will be other players who will probably have preferred playing under Ange. That remains to kind of show itself. But I think O'Reilly has responded extremely well to Brendan Rodgers' more personable approach. Maybe he's given him just slight pointers, just very, very simple instructions on getting into the box and picking up the right positions, because 4 goals at this stage of the season's, well, is it 5 now? I think it's 4, because he's basically equaled in 5 games or something like that. His entire tally for last season, it took him like 60 games to achieve that. So it's been an incredible start to the season for Matt O'Reilly. I noticed that he's been touted for a bit of international recognition as well.
Yeah.
Talk of getting into the senior squad for Denmark. So, does he qualify for Scotland? Can we nip in there first? Can we possibly nip in there?
If he spends enough time in the camp, I'm not too sure how it works. The only conversation I really want to hear about Matt O'Reilly is this new contract. We're handed out new contracts left, right and centre this summer. Anthony Ralston just signed a new contract. There's been no talk of Matt O'Reilly getting tied down to a new contract, but I think he's an extremely important player for us, Melly, and I think it's moves Celtic need to be making.
Yeah, I think, there has been some wee bits of chat that we're in talks with him and Hitati, but it's a difficult one, because we'd love to tie them down, but if those guys are looking sort of beyond Celtic, then does it make sense for them to sign it? Like, I don't know if contracts really make much of a difference, apart from Celtic might get a wee bit more money. He could sign a contract now and still leave in January, but it'd be good just to get him and Hitati tied down, and then you're looking at the squad going, you know what, everybody is pretty much sorted. It's just about bringing new players in. So between him and Hitati, if we could get the two of them tied down, business starting to look a bit better this summer.
It just feels quite positive though, doesn't it? When you get a player who signs a new contract, it just feels like a boost it's just nice for the fans. I know what you mean, and how increasingly in modern football they don't really mean an awful lot. I suppose the only way I ever get excited about players signing new contracts is if it's a player I like, but two, that it's sort of safeguards Celtic in the short term about maybe keeping them a wee bit longer and protects them financially.
Sort of take the urgency out of it a wee bit. But these guys, I know Matt O'Reilly wants to move, and I'm sure he does, and he's got plans for his career, and so does Hitati. Doesn't need to be next summer though.
Yeah.
You know, and you can, money talks at the end of the day. If Matt O'Reilly's sitting at Celtic and for talking 6 weeks on $8,000, if Celtic go, here's a $25,000 a week contract, he might sit there and go, do you know what? Actually, I could easily do another year at Celtic. And I think you're right. I think it's important Celtic at least be seen to be trying to keep their best players about the place.
And even in the cases of some players who have extended recently, there's no reason for Kyogo to sign a new contract, really, other than him getting a few extra quid a week. Presumably he's doing all right out of it now. But it just feels like such a statement of, maybe not so much intent, because these players, as you say, can leave, but it feels like, despite the fact there's no urgency to sign a new contract for someone like Kyogo, certainly not for Callum McGregor, because I didn't really feel like he was going anywhere anyway, particularly with the return of Brendan Rodgers, it just feels like they've sort of nodded to the fans in some way and said, without saying the words, I'm here for longer than you might have thought. You might have thought that, I mean, Kyogo had started sort of tentatively being linked to Bundesliga moves and stuff like that, but it just puts all that to bed for now, and we can kind of get on with the season.
It also just shows, look, Celtic, we've done our bit. We tried everything we can. We gave him a new contract when he was playing well. We tried to keep hold of him, but bigger club, clubs in bigger
Saudi
leagues.
Arabia.
If clubs in bigger leagues come calling, there's not a lot we can do about that. Celtic have offered these guys a platform. They've given them that. They're playing in the Champions League. They're winning titles. They're dishing out new contracts when they deserve it. After that, Celtic can't do much more, can they, to hold on to players?
They've given these new contracts as well. Spared no expense. Celtic.
Oh, it's another Jurassic Park reference, Melly. We didn't even rehearse this. It's going to be absolutely constant. Daiza Maeda's performing quite well since he got his new deal.
Oh, he was incredible at the weekend. I mentioned this on the match. I was into the game early and I was behind the goal where just behind where Joe Hart basically gets sent off, I was there. So Harry Kuehl, God bless him, was working with Dyson Maeda, and he was just rolling balls, playing 1-2s, passed them down the line for Dyson to cross them. He wasn't crossing them to MD, the two keepers were in the middle, but shelling them wide.
Is
over,
he seriously got Dyson Maeda out there practicing crossing?
Yeah, left-footed crosses. So
well, Kuehl was pretty decent at those himself, to be fair.
Aye, but I can see why he does it. When I've been up to Celtic at Lennoxtown, sorry, Harry Kuehl does a lot of one-to-one work with the guys, but he's shelling them all the way over the other side or shanking them over the bar. And
should
all.
We be doing that? Should we be asking Dyson Maeda to put in crosses?
Should we be asking a professional footballer who plays out wide to cross balls? Just after that.
I mean, the reason I bring it up is because what age is he now? You know, if he's not learned by this point, then you're not going to teach him in the next couple of weeks how to cross a ball.
Maybe it's just get the bad ones out the way. But when I seen that, I was like, oh man, this is one of the technically the worst players I've seen. But watching him in the game, you're like, as soon as Celtic go down to 10 men, there is not another player you would rather in your team. Like Brendan Rodgers said, it didn't really look like we had 10 men with a work rate. And again, where I was sitting, when it was coming to the last couple of minutes of the game before he scored, the ball went from centre-half to right-back for Livingston twice. And Maeda comes running over from the other centre-back and shuts this guy down. He takes a touch and looks up. And Maeda's closed it down and it's went out for a shy. Like, can't buy that sort of thing. It is unbelievable. You maybe don't see it all the time, but see when you see him doing that time again, Livingston can't get out, and that's with 10 men. So invaluable he was at the weekend against Feyenoord in European games at Ibrox this season. I'd just play him in big games. I wouldn't play him in the league games, as strange as that is to say, but I struggle with him. Not in a bad way, but because I've not got a reference point for him, because I've never seen a player like him. But, incredible work rate, and just love him, absolutely love him.
He was another one we thought he was a very Ange-specific player, didn't we? But Brendan's just getting as much out of him. And Dyson did speak earlier on the season about how he was maybe struggling to adapt to Brendan's system. Yeah. We're doing just fine.
Yeah, he's been really brilliant recently. And again, I do get up that he does have shortcomings going in the final third. Yeah, kicking footballs. But he was the one I was surprised most at that signed a new contract in the summer, because I thought, right, well, he's so very Ange-orientated, and that I thought that how does Brendan Rodgers get the best out of him, because he was such a specific tool in that sort of arsenal that Ange had. So when he signed a new contract, I was pleasantly surprised with it, because I certainly didn't expect him to commit his long-term future. But he's one of the strangest players. I don't like the prevailing narrative that all he can do is run, though, because I think that's quite reductive. I think it's quite unfair. Because
when I saw him make that finish, part of me did think, is he really just, has he just found himself on the left wing? Has he ever been a left winger? Have the Celtic coaches, Stephen, been more preoccupied whether or not Dyson could play on the left rather than whether he should play on the left, is what I'm asking. Because I saw that finish and I thought, is this guy just someone we've just decided should play out there because he's running? He's like, you've got me doing this, all this crossing. This has never been my game, but give me the ball in the middle and I'll finish it like that.
Dyson finds a way.
Yeah.
Dyson finds a way. Yeah, I don't know. From memory, I think he played largely in Japan as a centre forward. Yeah. No, he wasn't a particularly prolific one, but I think I've seen him play for Japan in the World Cup as well. He gave Germany all sorts of problems when they played against them. So he's just such an odd player. And again, I don't like the idea that all he does is make runs, because you have to be somewhat intelligent with that as well, because you don't want to just tire yourself out running for absolutely no reason. That's fairly easy to just play around if you just set up for it. You have to be sort of selective in your pressing and in your runs. And that goal that he scored is not the finish of a guy who can't play football and just runs about. He does have quality. Yes, he does disappoint on occasion when it comes to his decision making and his delivery, his technical
composure,
ability, his composure, his execution when it comes to those key moments. But I think he's got 20 goals for Celtic now in a season and a half, which is maybe what's it to about 1-4 probably around this point. So it's not bad. But I can't help but wonder, like, if that guy had all of those tools in his arsenal, had all the attributes that he brings to the Celtic team, plus he was scoring 30 goals a season, it would not be here. So I think that sometimes making a mess of chances, sometimes making a mess of crosses is probably about a fair price to pay for what he brings to it. But the thing is, when it does work for him, it is brilliant. He does score cracking goals. He tends to, from off the top of my head, he only really scores absolutely beautiful finishes or quite ugly, scrappy things at the back post where he's kind of fallen into the net with it. Or it's just, was there a goal?
Got one else at Livingston? Another one at Livingston?
That just hit off his head. Was that against Livingston? There was that goal, was it Easter Road last season? Yeah. Where he just cut in off the left and bent it into the top corner. So he's definitely got it in there, but he's been so, so important recently. Just the ability to put defenders under pressure and just cause chaos among defensive lines is something that's going to be very, very difficult to replicate if you were to give up on that and just think, well, we can do better, we can get a better player than Dyson. I don't know if that's necessarily the case.
Expressing your love can look many different ways, and with the right jewelry gift from Blue Nile, it can truly sparkle. Blue Nile's collection of classic diamond jewelry makes for the kind of gift that speaks volumes without saying a single word. Or switch things up with a sapphire piece sure to spark conversation. Either way, Blue Nile's diamond guarantee ensures you get the highest quality at the best price. Express yourself with Blue Nile, the original online jeweler, at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Public service announcement. Attention all my bearded troops out there from stubble to mane. If you didn't already know, Manscaped now sells beard products. You heard that correctly. The leaders in below-the-waist grooming changed the game with their Beard Hedger Pro Kit. And now they're going a step further with their brand new Handyman, an electric face shaver for quick and convenient way to achieve a clean-shaven look. Whether you're going to sharpen up your neckline or give your face a smooth finish, the Handyman has got you covered. Go to manscaped.com and use code TIMS for 20% off and free shipping. It's time to go from 5 o'clock shady. Yeah, baby.
No one likes a weird beard, so say goodbye to all your stubble trouble with Manscaped's Beard Hedger. The Beard Hedger is a high-tech piece of art in a travel-size package with a long-lasting battery, universal charging, and a strong motor. Your face is your first impression, and your beard is your most important accessory. So make sure you have the right tool for the job with the Beard Hedger. Looking for something, dare I say, smoother? Look no further than Manscaped's new Handyman Face Shaver.
Hey, Stephen.
Yes, Jamie.
You've got a travel size package. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code TIMS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. And use the code TIMS. Hit the refresh button with Manscaped. So I think it's fair to say that game was down to some good performances, but mostly down to Brendan Rodgers. It's tactical changes, managing the game professionally. But I don't think Brendan's intervention and the tactics was important, but his intervention in saving that young fan from the evil clutches of the child snatchers at Livingston was here. Look, I'm not saying Brendan Rodgers saw a moment there, you know. He's seen the disquiet. He knows he's no got all the fans on stage. Did he hear the Baywatch music in his head as he was running towards that fan?
Yeah.
I think he might have done.
Brendan, putting the PR in Brendan Rodgers. I think he saw the opportunity, rescued someone, handed them back to the fans. It was even the wee wave. He gave that wave to the fans as he was off, saying, well, my job here is done. All good stuff. I mean, like, I have a problem with the framing of it. So this wee guy jumps on the pitch, evades security in order to meet his heroes, and that's all cute and out of passion. I do it. There's the exact same thing. You meet Salma Hayek, and that's out of order. I get a night in the sales.
There's a reference there. I'm the people watching this Googling Salma Hayek.
Rob McLean. I don't know why I go too young. It's unseemly for a man my age. So I went for a woman older than me. So I do it, and I end up in the sales. PC gone mad.
Stop sending your kids on the pitch, though. For sure. Martin Melly, Brendan Rodgers was in the news again, not just for rescuing kids, but for having a wee dig supposedly at the Celtic transfer window. He was asked if he was content with Celtic transfer business. He said no, and then an argument ensued where he said no one's ever content, manager's never really content. Yes, I am content, I'm happy with the squad. Couldn't quite make his mind up, but I think all of us sitting in this room here are pretty certain that the manager's probably not as content as he could be, to be fair to Brendan, about the transfer business.
No, and look, we've seen that with the Champions League squad, didn't we? One left back in there.
Yeah.
I know the homegrown rule really holds us back, doesn't it? And the amount of centre backs we needed.
Doesn't hold Tony Ralston back? Doesn't hold his bank balance back? That's for sure.
Having Jamesy and Mickey Johnson are rolling in it. But I think with that, seeing guys like Burnaby, you're like, we needed a left back, didn't we? Joe Hart, I don't know if Brendan Rodgers wanted another goalkeeper because we weren't really linked with too much, but in an ideal world, I think we'd have got one and possibly another striker. So we kind of get sucked into this. Oh, it was going to be a new strategy for Celtic when Brendan Rodgers came in. We were going to push the boat out a bit, but that didn't happen. And look, I can live with that. That's fine if Celtic want to continue in that model, but don't leave your squad short.
Yeah. Well,
the squad's not short. Certain positions are short. Certain positions are beyond bloated. So the squad's very imbalanced again, and that's with us bringing a load of players. I think last week's fixtures
have shown that up a wee bit, haven't they?
Yeah, last week you're really looking at it, and I think we talked about it last time. If you're looking at Celtic's best 11, what do we maybe say? Palmer comes in and one of the centre-halves come in. They're just replacing Jota and Starfelt. So looking at the rest of the team, have we really brought MDLs in that goes straight into the team? Time will tell, but it doesn't look like it right now. That being said, maybe in some positions like midfield and out wide, we do have better options underneath that. But I don't think Brendan Rodgers would have been happy. There's no way you're telling me there's not a left back out there that's better than Burnaby. Because we're looking for better than Greg Taylor, but maybe that might be harder for being generous. But there's no way there's not a better one than Greg Taylor.
The squad photo was taken today, James McCarthy wasn't even in it. Which is really, I don't know if he's got COVID or he's off sick. It seems like the sort of thing though, these squad photos are, They're kind of like held in quite high regard sometimes in like football.
Quite traditional, isn't it?
Yeah, that used to be this late, did they?
No, I don't think so.
That's what they wanted to get in the transfer window, by the way. But there's guys, so James McCarthy's not even in the squad. We don't even really need to say any more beyond that. Then the B team played midweek and you had like Tilio, who's come back from injury. Kwon was in there. I've got the list here. Kobayashi was in there. Mikey Johnson was in the B team. And then there's guys like Bernardo. How does he fit in? And then Iwata came on against Livingston, and I suppose we fully expect Iwata to play centre-half against Lazio. How it's panned out.
It's very difficult. I mean, we'll come on to the Champions League.
Centre-half,
I think
we're just desperately unlucky, but I'm just talking about the overall nature of the squad. I don't think Brendan's, to reframe it back to make it more current in the last week, I don't think Brendan's comments, the initial comments about not being content, I think he was probably being quite honest there.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people are very keen to sort of defend the position. I think, well, us included, we're all bored about talking about the transfer window now because we're a few weeks on from it and we just need to sort of deal with it. But it's only when consequences arrive that you kind of look back now. And we've not, I wouldn't blame the Feyenoord game on a poor transfer window. And I don't even think it was necessarily a poor transfer window. I just feel like it was unfocused. I think it was a little bit strange. And there's just no convincing me that didn't try to sign a left back. We've just failed, I think. I think we've tried and failed to sign a left back because there are no excuses to go into a Champions League group registration with one left back. Liam Scales is there, can fill in, but where was he 6 weeks ago? There's no way they've planned for that. There's no way they've come into this season and thought Liam Scales can cover a multitude of positions. They would have been trying to get shot of him to Aberdeen a month ago. I'm pretty sure of it. He's done well, don't get me wrong, but that doesn't change the fact that a few weeks ago he was probably surplus to requirements. Injuries have brought him back into the team. So I don't want to drag his back fully into that, but the Brendan Rodgers chat about it, I think a lot of people were keen to sort of just dismiss it and say, well, all managers say that. All managers say they're unhappy with the transfer or the business done. I don't know if that's necessarily true, because I remember us being frustrated in the past with, I don't know which manager, just in general, coming out of a window and thinking, aye, but that ex-manager has said he's happy with the squad, but they always say that, don't they? They always just sort of say, oh, it would have been nice to add another couple of additions in there, but I'm happy with what I've got.
We'll go forward.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a, are you happy with the business done? Yes, but it's generally not a no, but. So those two things are quite different.
Put the toothpaste back in the tube after the fact.
So those two things are slightly different, but we just need to go on with it now. I mean, we just need to sort of live with it. We've not got the required players in my opinion, and certainly in certain positions. The left-back thing's just no good enough, and we are perilously close to turning up to Champions League games with the likes of like Scott Bain, and if we can't play Bernabe, I nearly said Bernabe at left-back, so he's not even valid, so it would be like Bain and Scales at left-back, Lagerbielke, and he's suspended now.
This is Brendan Rodgers probably sitting over his dinner having the same conversations. He's probably having the same conversations. I mean, how did you think the Feyenoord game went? I've got to be honest, I was sat here a couple of weeks ago, Liam Scales was still at the club, and I was sort of taking the piss out of him. I says, the guy's not good enough to beat Celtic. I'm rowing back in that a wee bit. Not much. No, I'm not rowing hugely back on it. I'm not saying he should be starting games and, you know, just because he's played well, it's his shirt now and Cameron Carter-Vickers has to come and win it back.
Prove yourself.
Which is, you know, that's not the way it works. But what I will say is Liam Scales has shown in the last couple of weeks, to me anyway, that he's more than good enough to be at the club. He can fill in the league, no problem. He can fill in if he needs to against Feyenoord. He's not brilliant, but the boy is putting his life and body on the line for Celtic. And God knows we've had plenty of players who have not even done anywhere near as close to that. And I know people will be listening to this. That doesn't make you a good player just because you're out there trying your heart out, sticking his head in the most dangerous places. He's willing to get that thing kicked clean right off. and I respect that. I respect that from the guy. So I was to say he had no place at the club and he shouldn't be at the club, I was probably wrong there. He has got a place at the club. It just so happens it's quite far down the pecking order. But I just think we were desperately unlucky in that Feyenoord game. I thought we held our own for the first, you know, half. The free kick, Melly, we can talk about it. I don't know what Joe Hart was thinking with his wall set up. I don't know what the wall was thinking. An odd thing in the game, trying to blame Kyogo for turning it away. I'm not really sure how much of a part that played. And then it just all went to shit.
Yeah. I agree with all that with Liam Scales. I think he's showing now that he is all right, isn't he? But when Navrotsky, Carter Vickers come back, I expect them to overtake them. I'd probably even say Welsh and Lagerbielke will overtake them. And later down the line, this squad will move past him, like the sort of Andrew squad move past guys like Turnbow and all that.
And Scales.
Before Scales even started. But he's been good recently. Long term, I don't think he'll be good enough for Celtic. I still hold that view. But I think I'll slightly disagree on your term when you said Celtic were unlucky. I think Celtic were masters of their own downfall again. The free kick at that point in the game is criminal to give away. The Joe Hart can shout at Kyogo all he wants, but for me, Joe Hart sets up the ball, so he's told him to be there. Kyogo being there makes no sense to me whatsoever. He's the slightest guy in the team, he's the smallest guy in the team, and that is where the most likely where Stengs is going to put the ball. So to have a small guy there, I thought his wall was far too over to the right, so he had two tall guys over at the right-hand side where there's no chance the ball's going to go, and he's slow in getting over to it as well. The ball is 30 yards out. It is not smashed or curled right into the top bin or anything like that. It bounces in front of him. I think it's terrible, and it's on Joe Hart for me. From the moment the free kick was given, he got his wall wrong, he got his angles wrong, he got his feet wrong, and Celtic, look, I think in the first half, again, showing Brendan Rodgers, we were pretty comfortable. You're going to give up chances in these games, but Celtic looked like they were in the game. They were keeping the ball well. I still think we lack a bit of quality out wide, somebody that can take on a man. But with what we've got, I thought we were good in the game. I thought we could have maybe got something in it if we had got to half-time drawn, but to lose that goal right before half-time, after that, I just couldn't see Celtic winning it because I didn't think we had it in us to score two goals. And then the second half was just utter nonsense of the highest Champions League degree on it.
Well, this is what I mean. I thought Celtic, I thought before we get the man sent off, even though we were 1-0 down, I thought Kuyo will get a chance. And if the chances fall to him, you think, right, that he might stick one in the back of the net. He's a pretty reliable finisher when you make good chances for him. When I said Celtic were unlucky, I suppose what I meant was, Stephen, I thought Lagerbielke was desperately unlucky to get sent off for that.
Yeah, for that particular incident, I thought there was a growing feeling. I started getting messages in various group chats saying we're going to get a man sent off here. Before it happened, we're going to get a man sent off.
Wait, is that the group? Have you got a group chat without me? Was it you two? It's not a group chat, it's just a pair of you.
I'm sending messages to myself.
Texting each other about the game.
There was a growing feeling, I thought, out there that someone was going to get sent off, and everyone was replying saying, Lagerbielke, minute. Mm. So he had been booked. From memory, I think he got away with a bit of a shove on someone, like a kind of blatant push before that happened. And then I think the penalty decision was, it's one of those sort of typical, he's given the referee a decision to make things right.
I just feel like that's something defenders always do. They just always put their hand out.
See, to be honest, at any level, you probably do that. Even if it's like just playing fives, if it feels like someone's going to steal in behind you, you probably balance yourself out and put an arm out there to try and block it off. It does happen. Brendan Rodgers was quite honest after the game and said they shouldn't have done it because the ball was going through to Joe Hart anyway. Yeah. There wasn't really as much danger as Lagerbielke possibly perceived. So it's just a little bit of naivety, a little bit of inexperience from him again. He's been brutally punished at the very highest level because that's exactly what happens at that level. Yeah. It happens all the time, particularly to Celtic, although we're obviously acutely aware of that.
This is where Celtic are stuck, isn't they?
Yeah,
to go and get a Champions League level player that... We can't shop in that market.
We can't register them either because we need to have given contracts to absolute mediocrity to fill out quotas.
This mad quota. But I just think, take that in isolation, right? I think the Feyenoord attacker threw himself to the ground there. And I thought there was a lot of that from Feyenoord. I thought they were hitting the deck and looking for stuff. The problem is, I think we don't do that. Celtic don't do that. And I'm not saying Celtic don't do it because we're too good to do it. I'm just saying domestically, we hardly ever have to do it. There's no requirement for us to dive and there's no requirement for us to try and win free kicks in that way. So to just turn that attitude on for six games during the Champions League or in Europe, you're never going to get it. So it's kind of knowing our football and DNA, but we fall foul of it so much.
It's a cultural thing Europe. As well, isn't it? Because...
Rangers do it, right? Rangers do it, but... I've never really seen Celtic. The odd player might come in and he'll do that, but he usually gets booed. It usually gets trained out.
That was going to be my point. It's like, I don't even know if it's a club to club thing. I think I can't think of any examples, but we have had players. In fact, quite recently when O started playing in the team, he was going down quite easily. But we don't look at that as in a kind of that's good. He's got those sort of dark arts for the chip. We'll need that in the Champions League. We tend to pour scorn on that. It's not something culturally in football we like to see in this country. And I know that there's often debates about how on the continent it's just part of the game. But for whatever reason, in the kind of British leagues, kind of British Isles, we don't really like it. The media,
it's ungentlemanly, Stephen.
Yes, it is. It's unseemly. Shit is unseemly, man.
I just want to be clear. I'm not saying that's why Celtic lost. It was observation I had during the game, which I thought contributed to the unluckiness of Lagerbielke.
Just that incident. That incident is just something he's going to need to learn from and gain experience from, because he can't, if that happens once, please don't let it happen again, because we just don't get away with them at that level at all. The game itself, I thought, I wasn't impressed with Feyenoord, and I don't say that out of any sort of like arrogance or anything, but you go into European games over many, many years, and even the years we've been doing this podcast, you go in with a little bit of a certain element of confidence, depending on who the opposition are. Even if it's a big team, you think, oh, do you know what, we could maybe give him a wee black eye, because even going into games like Valencia, a few years ago when Brendan Rodgers was still here, you go in thinking, well, we could maybe do something here, and then you find out, maybe not. They are much better than us. We didn't lay a glove on them. Even like Copenhagen, you think going into that, we could definitely beat them, and then you come away thinking, well, probably not. We're not ready for this level. But I didn't feel that against Feyenoord. I didn't feel like they were all that dangerous. I didn't feel like there was much. They're good. They're a good team. Clearly, they're the Dutch champions. They're there for a reason. But I wasn't blown away by them, and I thought that Celtic contributed that by making it hard for them, but doing all the things we spoke about earlier, that Dyson Mider making it difficult for him. He's a chaotician.
Is that what?
Yeah, it's from Jurassic Park.
Done us again, man.
So I thought Celtic did make it very difficult for them in the first half. And then, as you say, it just all went to shit and became an absolutely absurd game after the sending off. And
do you think the home send off was fair enough? I thought it was silly for the boy.
Yeah, I sympathise with him a little bit, because if you watch it back, it looks terrible in slow motion because it's the whole, you know, studs directly into the shin thing. But if you watch it back, his foot goes down at first and then pops back up right at the last second, which makes it look terrible. I mean, it's a straight red every day of the week, all day long. But I did have sympathy that in that I don't think it was full of malice. It wasn't like an intent. He just got him. He got his foot in a weird position and just went through the guy's shin. So again, it's just naivety.
I mean, that happens. Melly, I know we were talking in the post-match, by the way. I forgot to mention patreon.com/20minutetims if you want post and pre-match for Champions League away games and post-match podcasts for every single Celtic game. You can get it at patreon.com, as well as extra videos and writing and all that good stuff. I thought that's a tackle you probably don't even really need to make at home at Celtic Park in domestic league. That's just one of these freak events that you do, that you see some Celtic player make in an away European game. You never see that at home for Celtic. That's just one of these Celtic doing things in European games that Celtic do.
Yeah, like Steve said, I don't think there was any malice in it, but again, it's one of those ones you don't need to make that challenge there. If the ball's going past you, just get yourself into the game. Celtic were doing their classic shooting themselves in the foot in Europe, like as soon as Holm gets sent off as well, concede from the free kick, and it wasn't even a good delivery. They just passed it straight through and go in. So I thought the goal did get disallowed, but I just thought Celtic were going to try all the nonsense tonight, and Holm was part of that. Down to 10 men was going to be difficult enough. Lagerbielke, Celtic sort of switched it about, and then a couple of minutes later for Holm to put his team in that position. I don't mean it's unforgivable for him as a player, but it's unforgivable at that level. Celtic are then not going to win that game. It's just damage limitation from there. And look, that could have easily ended up 4-5-6 if Feyenoord had turned it on, if they had scored straight from that free kick and it wasn't just offside. So I think Holm put us in a very bad position. When you get into that, you have to be more savvy and more streetwise. And this cycle Celtic go through. A lot of the players last season now experienced the Champions League, and we think, right, next year they'll have learned from that, they'll go into it. Two of our new signings in the summer who have no Champions League experiences are the ones that are sent off and really put Celtic on the back foot. This is just going to be constant for Celtic, because after they learn, the guys that had already learned the previous year, some of them might go. So it's just going to be the way it is for Celtic coming into these games. We're never going to get ready for these games in any way unless we are competing in it every year. And even then, you maybe get 6 games. But maybe next season, if we can get into it, have 8 games and then be able to compete a bit more, I think it will be better. But home...
You're writing this season's Champions League off already?
Oh, no, I've just been for guys like that. That's like the two of them suspended for another game, and then by the time that comes around...
So you're saying it's sort of going to pass them by a wee bit, but by the time they get up to speed, the tournament's over?
Possibly. I don't see the two of them playing much if all our players are back in that. So it's going to be a big learning curve for them, but really put the rest of the team on the back foot then, didn't we? We made substitutions to try and change it, and then you look at what we're doing, 4-3-1. You're just doing nothing you can really do with 9 men apart from pray that we don't score, because all Feyenoord do is pop it out wide, or full back overload, and they've got a constant overload on us. So Celtic done well keeping the score down. And again, no pride, because I don't want to say losing 2-0 was good, but a lot of teams could have, again, just completely folded there. And if it ended up 4-5-6, you could say, we're down to 9 men. It's just another European beating. But this team are a bit tougher than that, and they stuck to it and came away with it. They still tried their hardest, could have thrown in the towel but didn't, and those guys, look, they'll learn from it. They're learning the hard way, and Celtic learn the hard way. But again, it's another one you look at for 45 minutes, because the goal came at like the 47th minute, Celtic were fine. And then we end up 2-0, a cheap free kick, and then two guys sent off, and you've got no chance in the Champions League.
Well, that was the thing, it was 11-11 for me, Stephen. Celtic held their own in what we all thought was going to be a really, really tricky game. That's probably the most difficult game we'll get in the group. Well, that's how the pots have decided it will be. So I was encouraged somewhat by the Celtic performance. As Melly said, once you go down to 10 men, you've almost no chance. Once you go down to 9 men, it's basically game over. You're losing the game and that's the end of it.
Yeah.
It's going to take something special to come back for that. And, you know, it's a one in a million type thing. But having watched the game, I thought to myself, you know, Celtic we might do something in this group. I think there's a couple of games coming up. But we will probably, I mean, we've got Lazio at home, that's our next game, isn't it?
In disarray, but they'll probably sack their manager before we get there.
And they'll get their stuff together. I think there's a couple of games, I think it's important we pick up points, and I think there's a couple of games we can do that, and I'm not as discouraged for this group as I was when the pots were drawn.
Yeah, I tend to agree, but the trouble is we're dealing with certain realities now. Now, we're one game down, which was a complete nonsense, and we think, right, we'll just package that off, we'll just sort of write it off, and we can learn from that and move forward, but I remember last season thinking, right, well, next game we can do this. And all of a sudden you find yourself 5 games deep in the group and you've not really achieved what you wanted to, what you set out to achieve. I worry about this group getting away from us now because it could be 4 games in before we start to cobble some sort of strong team together. Yeah. We're now severely weakened as a result of these suspensions. So unfortunately, these games don't exist in a vacuum on their own and we can just sort of reset and go into the next one. We're carrying suspensions on an already severely depleted defence. Lagerbielke is suspended. So is Holm, who probably wouldn't have started the game anyway. So are we going to be playing Lazio with Iwata and Scales?
Praying Nat Phillips's
at the back. Nat Phillips, who I forgot existed, right? So,
that's on you.
Yeah, so he's a guy we brought in for this exact situation, for this exact scenario, and he's not been available for any of it. So
the emergency loan.
Yes, the worst emergency loan of all time. So, or best case scenario, we could be throwing Nat Phillips in there exactly how we did in the last game against Indy. He doesn't last the game, gets hooked off at half time and isn't seen again. So we're dealing with a guy who's played very little football in years now. Is he going to be the saviour? No, I'm not writing this group off. I just worry that what we might do is find ourselves sort of lurching from one nearly to the next. And that Feyenoord was a sort of a nearly, but then it just fell apart in the second half.
Because of the makeup of the group, I don't think we're going to see a runaway winner. I think maybe if...
Because the draw as well in the other game sort of helped us out.
The goalkeeper, Steven Celtic. So I think with that being a draw, Atletico Madrid, I think, will be the best team in the group. But I can see 5 points maybe being enough to keep us in Europe beyond that. But also in saying that, Fiorentina, Feyenoord have already got 3 of them. So Celtic need to pick up points and they need to do it probably quickly. We need probably a victory in our next game or need to beat the team that's in disarray. Lazio have had a terrible start to the season. That and Feyenoord, you need to target 6 points and then maybe try and find another 2 points somewhere.
Well, I mean, it's all eyes on the home games, isn't it? I mean, that's you've got to win your home games. It's something you don't really hear in Europe anymore. That was wheeled out so often. You need to win your home games. That doesn't really work out like that anymore. But we got to
win your home games, draw your away, 12 points. Easy, easy.
Sail through. Just win your home games all the way through at the final. All eyes on the next Lazio game. That's where we need to pick things up. I agree with what you're saying, Stephen. It's going to be difficult. It's the defensive stuff. Everyone else is fine. There's people in midfield that can fill in. Palmer needs to get up to speed. I think he needs to get some game time for him. Abada being injured, that doesn't really help. There's a few wee issues around the pitch. I think the centre halves is the big issue. Need to get Nat Phillips back. Need to get the other two back up to speed as quickly as possible, if that's even doable. And we'll see where we go for there.
Yeah, Navrotsky's not in the squad either as well. No. So he's not even a possibility. So I keep forgetting about these. We keep talking, oh, well, if we could maybe do this, then we forget somebody's suspended, somebody's not even registered for it. So I'm not looking at it. Again, I'm not writing the group off, but I'm trying not to look at it as a right Celtic versus Lazio. Beat them home and away 4 years ago or whatever it was, 3 years ago. I'm just looking at the names.
I've got worse manager, Charles.
I'm just looking at the names. I can't get away from, unfortunately, is the fact that it's Celtic without a defence.
Yeah.
It's just we're already worried about going into this group without the use of Cameron Carter-Vickers for potentially 3, maybe even 4 games. And before we know it, we're struggling to keep up because we're just missing one of our most important defender, arguably most important player. So that situation is still ongoing, but now it's got worse because we've got suspension. So I came away from that game thinking we mixed emotions because I thought, right, we could have won that. Well, maybe not won. Maybe could have done better had it not gone to shit in the second half. I wasn't impressed with Feyenoord. but now we're carrying significant damage from it.
It's going to be tough.
Yeah.
It's going to be tricky. The Champions League's never easy, but I don't think it's going to be a complete disaster. I'm not saying you are saying that, but I just think there's so much football to be played in this group. And you know what? That 2-0, Feyenoord might be ruining that a wee bit. Because, you know, goal difference and even stuff like head-to-head, they probably wish that they scored another couple of goals in there and made that really comfortable for themselves. And I think we can all take, it's kind of like that second half doesn't count. That bit doesn't count. What counts is when it's 11v11, we'll go back to 11v11 and then we'll see where we are there. And we've got a couple of games left to go in the Champions League.
We've got a point. If you were to cut the games off when both teams were at 11, we've got a point in sort of Steven Gerrard terms from years ago.
Well, their assistant manager
there. We'll get beat 1-0 at half-time.
Were we?
It's okay.
I tried.
It's okay. It's okay. Their assistant manager's out right now talking about how they beat PSV. You see that in the latest? We beat PSV.
See, if I was to look at this in a positive way at all...
Yeah, let's end on a positive, Steven. Over to you.
Lazio are in disarray, so they're probably thinking along the same lines. We need to go to Celtic Park. They're busy reading memes about how Lionel Messi once described that as one of the best atmospheres in world football. Xavi, all Barcelona players, just saying about how difficult a place it is to go. So they're all reading that. They're all getting in their own heads a wee bit. So they're in disarray.
They're rewatching the game for a couple of years ago as well.
Yeah. Fraser Forster, sadly, no longer with us. He's still alive, right now, but he's not at the club anymore. But that's the one sort of positive takeaway, is that Lazio aren't in a good spot either, and they're going to a difficult away fixture.
Yes.
I'm trying to look at it from outside the sort of Celtic bubble. They're going to a difficult away fixture in the Champions League, not in the best of places. Celtic aren't either, but maybe just on this day, Lazio are in a worse spot than we are in terms of preparation for it, because I worry about the defence. I struggle to get away from that.
It'll be fine. And we'll be there. Celtic v Lazio, and there'll be a match at a match reaction podcast on patreon.com/20minutetim. Support us, and we'll see you next week.